Watch what milk does to your eyes. Take a look at these two retina scans. They both look sharp, focused, and healthy, but only one of them belongs to someone young.
This crew in Bradenton was removing art from crosswalks and sidewalks in the Village of Arts neighborhood yesterday. The crew used power washers and a large utility truck to clean a crosswalk at 9th Avenue West and 12th Street West, which was a local landmark with painted artwork. A state mandate from Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida Department of Transportation wants to keep roads, quote, free and clear of political ideologies. The targeted art in Bradenton includes non-political designs such as a religious symbol, whimsical sketches, and bold colors. State Department of Transportation crews removed a rainbow-painted Pulse Memorial crosswalk in Orlando last week. Sarasota County is encouraging nonprofit organizations to apply for a portion of the $210 million in federal disaster recovery funding. Specifically, $57 million is available for public infrastructure projects to build facilities that help with recovery from the 2024 storms. The pre-application period for nonprofits is open until September 5th. Proposals must meet HUD requirements by serving low and moderate income individuals and rehabilitating or constructing public facilities. An information session is scheduled for August 27th, and the Sarasota County Commission will make the final selection of approved projects. Sarasota Memorial Hospital broke ground on SMH Northport, the city's first full-service hospital. While the initial plan is for a 100-bed facility, the hospital board has already approved a $57 million expansion. This early investment will add three floors of shell space to the main tower, preparing the facility to eventually double its inpatient capacity to 208 beds to accommodate the city's rapid growth. The Community Foundation of Sarasota County recently awarded $1.4 million in grants to 30 local nonprofits and educational institutions. The grants will support a wide range of initiatives, including expanding access to mental health services, providing financial aid for students, funding disease research, and increasing access to health care. Recipients included organizations focused on youth and education, such as Also Youth and the Boys and Girls Club, as well as health and mental health providers like the Roskamp Institute and Planned Parenthood. The grants also supported arts and cultural organizations like the Sarasota Ballet and the Arts and Cultural Alliance. This has been Danya Heffley with your WSLR News Headlines for Wednesday, August 27th.
Sing a healing game. Good morning. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report right here on your own community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton. And the opinions you hear today are strictly those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, the board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. And I did play Van Morrison by the Healing Game, and there was a reason for that, but you'll find out later. And I guess I'm ready to say hello to the guests, John. Everything all set there?
Hey,
yeah, are you there, John?
I'm glad to be with you. Yeah, Bob, I'm glad to be with you.
Hello, John.
Hey, can you hear me? I'm here, Bob. I hear you.
Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me, Bob?
Well, let's play the Healing Game a little bit more, and we'll contact our guest one more time. It's been a little problem getting in touch with him. But before I contact him, let me read a brief bio. I'm going to read it. Don't put Van back on until I read a bio. I'm going to have John Notner on the phone. He's the founder of a project called The Peace of My Mind. And A Peace of My Mind is a multimedia arts project created by award-winning photographer John Notner that uses portraits and personal stories to bridge divides and encourage dialogue around important issues. Through exhibits, workshops, lectures, on-site studios, and distance learnings, A Peace of Mind leads transformative experiences that help a polarized world rediscover the community, the common humanity that connects us. A gifted storyteller, Notner has worked on four continents, gathering stories of human courage, grace, and resilience. He has produced projects for national magazines, Fortune 500 companies, and nonprofit organizations. A Peace of Mind reflects his belief that art and storytelling can help individuals, organizations, and communities articulate their deepest values and encourage action toward building social capital and community connections. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I was playing Van Morrison for a reason, because John was in Ireland. John was in Ireland this past summer, 3 weeks, and related to the healing that has taken place in Northern Ireland. So that was my motivation for putting Van Morrison on. So in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can bring Van Morrison back into the game, the Healing Game, by Van Morrison. And let me see if I can get him back. I do. It might have just gone. Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm here.
No,
John. Can you hear me?
There he is. Are you there, John?
I am.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello.
There it is. Okay.
Hello, John. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Bob?
Am I not plugged? I'm not plugged in. Jeez. I am not plugged in. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, John. Are you there?
Hey, Bob. I'm here.
Well,
how are you?
We had a few technical problems here. No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad to glad you're on the line, and I'm glad you have.
Yeah, you can hear me, Dom?
We can hear you fine now. Yes, I think we
All right.
I think we had a technical problem there, a technical problem here, and that's where we're at. But we did play Van Morrison, a little bit of Van Morrison, The Healing Game, and I had mentioned to the listening audience there was a reason behind that you had been in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, where a major healing has happened over the years. And but before we get into that, I had just read your bio and a little bit about peace of mind and about yourself. So we first talked way back in 2010, and that's more or less when you began A Piece of My Mind. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad to know that we're both still doing this work, Bob.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you have done over this 15-year period. I look at your website, and there's so much on there. It's like Americans Who Tell the Truth. You know, I first met Robert Shetterly back in 2012, and he's been on the show many times over the years, and his project has evolved so much. He's been in 38 different states, with his portraits being hung at different colleges and universities, libraries, all over. So tell us about A Piece of Mind, how it all began, and how it has developed since 2010.
Yeah, before I launch, I will just tell you that I've followed Robert Shetterly's work for a long time. We've been in touch by phone and email, and back in 2022, as I was traveling through Maine, I got to go visit him and have a cup of coffee and talk about his work. He's always been a role model. It does my heart good to know that his work is still out there as well.
Oh yes.
When we first talked in 2010, like you said, A Piece of My Mind was a little baby project. It was just this notion. I'd worked for my whole career as a freelance photographer, shooting for national magazines and Fortune 500 companies, but I wondered if there was something I could do with my photography and storytelling in a divided world to remember what connects us. You know, we just to sit down with people from all different backgrounds and go through a process of deep listening and see what we could learn, see if we could recognize that common humanity. And in a world that was filled with angry voices, I didn't really think that I could shout down those angry voices, but I just wanted to create an alternative and a place where we could hear each other a little bit better, where we could learn a little bit from different experiences and see if we could use those stories as to help figure out a path for moving forward. You know, and so at the time when we talked in 2010, I was still subsidizing this work with my assignment photography, and I would shoot some assignment photography, and then I would set aside a little bit of time to do some new interviews. But over time, this thing has grown into my life's work, and so now we've got 4 books, and we've got 5 traveling exhibits, and we go around the country with these stories, and we'll go to colleges and community centers and conferences and faith communities, and we'll use these stories to help people talk about conflict resolution and civic responsibility and social change, and really to have hard conversations in a productive way. So I don't have to tell you that even though you and I have been doing this work for years, we haven't quite fixed the world yet. There's increasing challenges in the world, but I think that makes it even more imperative that we can see each other and hear each other a little bit better through this process of storytelling. And so, we're as busy as we can be doing work in the United States. And like you alluded to, now we've started doing some international work. Spent a few weeks in Northern Ireland, I've been there a few times in the last year, and we'll get into that as the hour progresses. But basically, we're here now, and we're growing our team to see if we can help train the next generation of storytellers to look at examples of success and amplify voices that need to be heard and use that as our roadmap for how we move forward together.
Well, anyone has to do is take a look at your website, and it's just so full of incredible information, so many interviews. I mean, you've interviewed so many people over the last 10 to 15 years, and a good percentage of them are on the website, and every month is represented for the last 10 years as to what you've done that particular month. And it's just amazing. I just clicked on a few just to get an example of where you've been and what you've been doing. And, of course, the last time you were on here, it was at the beginning of 2023, and that was after you had traveled around the country for, 30 months, 2.5 years? Is that right?
Yeah, 2.5 years. During the pandemic, my wife and I sold our house in Minnesota. Our kids were grown. They were off doing their own thing. We were sort of done with that house. And, of course, all of us were trying to figure out what to do with the pandemic. A lot of what I did with the peace of my mind was supported by programming fees, by lectures, and by exhibit leasing and book sales. Well, I couldn't do any of that during the pandemic. So my wife's a pretty smart person, and she said, well, couldn't you still do new interviews if you sat outside, if you sat 15 feet apart and set up your microphones and found people who were willing, could you still do that? And so we sold our house, we bought a van, and we spent, like you said, 2.5 years, 900 days, driving 93,000 miles across the country, and that has turned into our latest book and our latest exhibit called Lessons on the Road to Peace. And in it, we were traveling very specifically to a lot of our tension points in the country. You know, we went to the border to talk about immigration, and we went to Mississippi to talk about moving Confederate monuments. We went to Skid Row to talk about housing security. But again, always looking for the people who are finding creative solutions to these really challenging issues and trying to amplify those voices. And like anybody else, I think I get a little concerned and a little bit dismayed when I turn on the news. But as it happens, when I'm out in the world and I'm meeting people one-on-one and face-to-face talking about finding solutions to some of these real challenging issues, that's where I find my hope. So in one way, it's a little self-serving as I do this, because it sustains me and it keeps me going. It helps me believe something better is possible. But at that same time, I'm hopeful that these stories also can encourage others and can also help help other folks understand the world in some new ways.
Well, with what you just said, it reminds me of the fact that Robert Chatterley began his project after we invaded Iraq in 2003. He was just so frustrated, so disappointed, and he said to himself, "What can I do? What can I do to make a difference?" And he began painting portraits of those Americans who tell the truth. And it began with a lot of Americans who had passed away, you know, like Abraham Lincoln and so many others. And it transformed into meeting people who were actually doing something at the time. You know, people like Medea Benjamin, David Swanson, Kathy Kelly, all those people have been on the Peace and Justice Report talking about the problems that have arisen since 2003 and beyond, but they're still fighting the good fight. And Robert Chatterley, like you, wanted an outlet for his deep anger, and he found it. Now he's drawn like 285 portraits, I believe, of all these different people who tell the truth and are into peace, love, and understanding.
So I only brought that up because there's such a similarity between you and Robert as far as what got you into doing this. And
there's so much overlap, Bob, and Robert really has been sort of a role model and an inspiration. He started, I think, a little earlier than me, or he launched a little faster than me. And there are some differences, of course. I'm photographing people. He's painting people. So he can also go back into the historical record in a way that I can't and paint portraits of people who are no longer with us. But what I love about this process is the notion of using art as a way to help people see the world in new ways, to sort of open people's eyes, to bring a new lens, as it were, into the conversation so that we can start to look at things from a different direction and hopefully learn a little bit in the process.
Well, your photographs are incredible. I mean, all anyone has to do is go on your website, apieceofmind.org, and you have photographs of all the different states and countries, especially Ireland recently, that you've been to. When you do a program, a project, a workshop, you go out and meet the people and then get into their world, or where they live, what they do, and you talk to them about what does peace mean to them, right? Is that's the question you throw out to them?
Yeah, really. This is a series of oral histories, and like Robert, we've done several hundred of these now around the world, and the conversations are built around the central question: what does peace mean to you? You know, how do you work towards it in your life? What are some of the obstacles you encounter along the way? But what I've found, I like to joke that this has just become my gateway question, right? This is just an entry into conversations that allow people to talk about what's on their heart. So it is an opportunity to talk about issues of race and gender and class and politics and faith. You know, A Piece of My Mind is not a project about race, but when you start having these conversations in the world that we live in, there are a lot of conversations that touch on issues of race. It's not about gender, but there are a lot of conversations that touch on issues of gender. It's not about class. All these things, what it really is about being human and what that means to be in relationship with one another and how we navigate some of the challenges of the world in that space as humans. And so as I do this, I really have three audiences in mind. The first is myself, because as I sit down and talk with these people from really different experiences, I mean, we interview people who have marched with Dr. King, who are Holocaust survivors, who've been through the prison system, who have a terminal diagnosis, who are wounded veterans, all of these different experiences in life. And if I sit down and pay attention and listen, I know I'm going to learn something new. I'm going to understand something new. So I'm the first audience that I'm thinking about. Second audience is the person who I'm interviewing, because it's really important to me. You know, journalism a lot of times can be an extractive process. You drop in, you get your story, you leave. It's really important to me that this whole process is rooted in relationship. And so at the end of the interview that I do with a person, I want to make sure that they feel seen and heard and valued. And so that's the second audience. I want to make sure that this process is let them come out feeling whole and feeling acknowledged and recognized for their experience in the world. And then the third audience is the bigger public. You know, as we travel with these stories, I have the good luck of encountering all of these amazing people. And then I get the role and the obligation of curating those stories, of carrying those out into the world and making sure that I treat them kindly and fairly and justly and make sure that they're used to try to promote positive dialogue in the world, which I think is what everybody who agrees to do an interview is hoping for. And so I'm the poster child of privilege, middle-aged white guy, college educated, live in the suburbs, cisgendered, married, two kids, and a dog. And all of many of the people who I talk to don't share that same privilege in the world. And so it becomes really important to me as I sort of curate and carry these stories around that I try to minimize my filter as much as possible and amplify the voices of the people who I've encountered.
I happen to be looking at the book cover of Portraits of Peace, Searching for Hope in a Divided America, and it's a photograph of a trailer, an old trailer. So how did you decide on that?
That's not the one that I lived in for a while, by the way, Bob. That is an old derelict trailer that I photographed in Clarksdale, Mississippi, at a little place called the Shack Up Inn, which is a collection of old sharecroppers' cabins and grain bins that have been turned into to lodging in this Delta Blues town. So that book was my third, and for that book I worked with Broadleaf Publishers. And when you work with a publisher, they say things like, provide us with a whole gallery of images so that we can start working on cover ideas. And so I provided them a whole gallery of images. I've always loved that portrait. And then they send you a message that says, hey, here's the cover that we settled in. We hope you love it as much as we do. As an artist, when you're working with a publisher, you let go of a little bit of that control of work partnering with another organization. That being said, I did love the cover as much as they did. But that was something that was driven by the designers at the publishing house. It happened to, I think, reflect the spirit of travel, the spirit of exploration, and sort of the charm of the quirky that I hope is embodied in this project.
Right. Well, I one question came to my mind when you were mentioning all the different people with their backgrounds and their life story, and when we're on the road for 30 months and traveling from city to city and all around the country, how did you find the people that you decided to interview?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. It's a little bit of a wonderful wild goose chase, to be honest. Paired with sort of journalistic research. My training is in journalism. I worked for daily paper for a couple of years. I shot for national magazines for a bunch of years. And so, as an outsider, there's really no great way to drop into a city and know who to talk to. And so it becomes really important to me that I build relationships in advance of my arrival, that I find somebody who can be an advocate and an ally in a community who has deep roots there, understands what we're trying to do, and understands the workings of that community. And that person then can connect me to some people that they know. So I'll give you an example. When we went down to the border, I went down towards Nogales, Arizona, Nogales, Sonora, Mexico. We stayed by a little town called Patagonia. And in Patagonia, I have a friend and a colleague. You know, I've got this deep network of contacts across the country because of a lot of the travel photography I've done, because of my work for A Piece of My Mind. I've built up this network of folks. If I was going to come to Florida, I'd probably reach out to you, Bob. But in this case, I reached out to a woman who went to the same high school as me, named India Aubrey. And India runs this organization called Voices from the Border. And they're deeply engaged in issues of immigration and supporting migrants who are waiting for their asylum hearings. And I reached out to India and I said, hey, I'm coming down for a stretch. Who do you know? Who can you help connect me to? And we were coming down for several weeks, but with India's help, I lined up enough interviews to keep me busy for the first week. And then I left. So that was enough to get me sort of established on the ground and building some relationships there. I left 3 weeks in my schedule so that at the end of every interview, when I was down there that first week, I could say to the person, sitting across from me, who else do I need to know? What else do I need to be thinking of? Who else should I talk to? And that sort of expanded my web of connection. So there was a luxury of time, and there was the assistance of people who were engaged in the community on the ground. And so that sort of exploration, and then the willingness to say yes. You know, when a door opens, when an opportunity presents itself, even if it's not clear that it's going to be productive and helpful, to be willing to say yes and walk through that door and see what happens. So it's a journey of exploration, and it's a process of learning along the way.
Well, in hindsight, it seems so easy, but we know it isn't. You have to line up that initial contact, and they have to be someone that does know people in the community, and then it does just flow, as it sounds like it did. It usually does.
Yeah. I should say that there are 1,000 dead ends in the process.
Right.
You know, you'll reach out and you'll look at something that you think has promise, and it turns into nothing. And so it requires also a steady dose of determination and acceptance of rejection and willingness to, if you run into a wall, to turn a little bit different direction and try again from a different place.
Well, I want to let the listeners know, John, that they're listening to the Peace and Justice Report right here on their own community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM, Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LPFM, Bradenton. And I know that one thing I want to mention before we get back to our conversation, support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or info@manateespirit.com. And, John, you had quite a last 3 months, and I know you going on your website looking at what transpired. It's just amazing what you've done with the help of 3 interns from Willamette University. So could you talk about the interns? I watched a video on your website. They're all very impressive, very impressive college students.
Oh, my gosh, they're amazing human beings. I was so lucky to have their help for the summer. Those interns were Kate West, who's from Oregon, and Sawyer Garrison, who is from the Twin Cities here in Minnesota, and then Caitlin Emai, who's from Santa Cruz, California. All 3 of them are now in their senior year at Willamette University. All 3 of them are part of a program there called the Conversation Project. And the Conversation Project really helps train students in how to navigate difficult civic dialogue, how to have hard conversations, how to do deep listening. And so these students, it seems, were handcrafted for the work that A Piece of My Mind does. And I had met these 3 students last summer when I traveled to Northern Ireland with the Conversation Project from Willamette University. And we visited Corrymeela, which is a reconciliation center north on the coast, north of Belfast. And it's a place that has hosted conversations and helped people navigate some of the challenges of the Troubles and continues to try to bring people together from both sides of that Protestant-Catholic divide that has been so challenging in Northern Ireland. And so we were only there for 5 days, but we did some programming together, and I started having a conversation with one of the students about possible internship for this summer. And when I started talking with the folks at Willamette, they said, well, how do you feel about 3 interns? And my first thought, because A Piece of My Mind now is a nonprofit, a 501c3, and, you know, we don't have the biggest budget in the world. And so my first thought was, I don't know how I can afford that. But Willamette had access to some resources, which helped make that possible. So I'm really grateful for that. And so Kate and Sawyer and Caitlin were able to come along for, I think it was about 80 days over the summer. And we started out at Telluride Film Festival, Mountain Film Festival in Telluride, Colorado, to get inspired and talk about storytelling a little bit. Then we went over to Northern Ireland for a few weeks, and we gathered a bunch of new stories from Northern Ireland. We came back. We did some programming with the Montana Institute in Big Sky, Montana. We spent some time editing all of those Northern Ireland things, and then we went down to the southern coast of Louisiana to gather stories around, you know, climate change and environmental justice and culture and resilience down there. So, I think as I sit with my coffee in my hand, feeling a little tired this morning, I think that explains why. We've been running pretty hard.
Oh, yes, yes. Eighty days? Is that what you said?
It was from the end of May till early August when they had to go back to school.
Wow! And what was that program that they're in at Willamette University? Project? What was that?
It's called the Conversation Project.
Now, is that a minor or I'm just very interested. The Conversation Project that.
The structure of it is a hybrid of political science and theology and public administration and history. It really sits at this interesting intersection, but there is coursework in it, but it's also sort of this extracurricular thing that engages the students. And boy, they've got a really fascinating and bright group of students that's led by the two professors, Wendy Boring and David Guterman, who teach there and lead the Conversation Project. If you go on the Willamette website and search for the Conversation Project, you'll see more information about it.
So you must have know these three young students quite well after 80 days of being with them. So do you know what they plan to do after college?
Well, at least one, maybe two, will probably go on to study an advanced degree in theology. I think all three of them, I think and I hope that this summer was an opportunity to look at different ways that people move through the world and imagine some new ways that people make a living. It doesn't just have to be a normal job, but you can make an impact. You know, you can connect with your communities. And I think people learn some things about themselves. Like most of these things, it'll probably take a little bit of time to seep in and play out and see exactly where that leads. But my hope is that 50 years down the road, they look back on this summer and they say, you know what? That was a part of shaping who I am.
Maybe let's give a plug to that video that there was a get together right at your home base in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where you gave a recap with the students, and there's a video on your website, and I heard them all speak, and they're just so impressive. Could you plug that video so people can take a look at that?
Yeah, of course. I think if people go to my website, which like you said before, it's apieceofmymind.org. Piece is P-E-A-C-E. And I think on the homepage, if you scroll back a couple of little thumbnails, there's a black and white picture of the four of us, and it says a pretty good summer, or a good summer, I think is the headline. And if people go on there, they can watch this hour-plus event that we hosted. A piece of my mind, we gather stories, but then the important work is sharing those out and building community. And so we invited people. I think we had about 140 people in our studio space in St. Paul. And everybody got to talk a little bit about the stories we encountered and the things that we learned. And it was a multimedia presentation with some video and some slides. And I talked a little bit about how this summer was a model for how a piece of my mind can grow. And then Kate Sawyer and Caitlin each had about 10 minutes where they could talk about what moved them the most this summer. And they all brought their own personality to it. They all brought their unique perspectives of the world to it, and shared some of what moved them. And it was I was so proud of the work that they did through the whole summer, but then the way they shared that back. Yeah, if people want to watch the show. Oh, and then in between each speaker, we had a string quartet that played a little bit of reflective music to sort of let it all soak in. I love that combination of storytelling and music. And so we did that. And so people can go on the website. They can watch that. And then right now, also on the website, we're rolling out some of the stories that we did from Louisiana. And by the time we get to late fall, we'll be rolling out all of those new stories from Northern Ireland.
Well, you know what I'd like to do now, John, is I think it said on your website it's the third year in a row that you were at the Montana Institute.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a three-minute video that I have found by the founder of the Science of the Positive Framework, explaining the core assumption of the science of the positive and why it matters. And this is Dr. Jeff Linkenbach. So I want to play this, and I'd like to have your you talk about it afterwards. This, the title of this three-minute audio is "The Positive Exist," and I'm going to have...
Yeah, let me just add before you play it, Bob. I haven't heard this particular one, but I know Jeff, Dr. Jeff Linkenbach really well, and I have a deep respect and love for the work that the Montana Institute does. And I'll just frame it this way, that sometimes in life we look at the problem and the challenge and we get lost in that. It's also really important to be looking at the solution, to be looking at what it is we do well and try to grow that as well. And so that's sort of the model of the science of the positive. I'm sure Dr. Linkenbach says it better than me. I'm looking forward to listening to this with you.
Okay, here we go. We're going to... Clicking on the play button right now. Don't ask me why it isn't playing. It's staying right at the beginning. Maybe because I've opened it and closed it several times. You know how it is,
uh-oh,
right? Yeah. I'm going to try one more time. If I don't get it, I'm just going to close the window and open it up again. And
sure.
Yeah, it's not playing again. What I'm going to do is I'm going to close it and hopefully find it again. And in the meantime, yeah, I wouldn't mind you. Now I'm on the homepage for Dr. Jeff Linkenbach. So I'm going
to... Well, as you're looking there, Bob, I'll just talk a little bit more. So what I've done is for the last 3 years, they've invited a piece of my mind to come to their conferences. And we, you know, besides these long-form interviews we do, we also do these studio sessions where we'll ask a question. We will invite people to respond in 25 words or less, and then we do a black-and-white portrait. And so these long-form interviews, I'll do maybe one, sometimes two of them in a day. But these studio sessions, we can have 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 people come through in a day, and we create this body of work. And so at the Montana Institute conference, you know, there are a few hundred people there. And we have asked people there, when have you seen an example of the positive in your community? You know, when have you seen the positive grow in your community? And these are people who work in prevention professions, so people who are trying to reduce substance use, people who are trying to increase mental health access, people who are trying to reduce suicides. And so over the course of a couple of days, you know, we can gather this whole body of work, and then we do the production really quickly overnight. And I can share it back to the community in a closing keynote. And so they can start to see their own work reflected back to them. They can start to see their peers and themselves in some new ways. And that's some of the work that we've done with them. And boy, when you create a space like that where you're willing to listen and people can just come and share their stories, they share amazing things.
I can believe they do. You know, once they feel relaxed, they open up, they hear other people, and they say, I am going to let people know what I'm feeling. You know, I've been holding this in for so long. Let me share. If other people can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah. I think we all have this little bit of wisdom that we like to share, and we don't always have the opportunity to do it. So this is a platform where we can go into a community and sort of gather that collective wisdom.
All right. I think I have it ready to go this time. This is
I got my fingers crossed.
Okay. This is Dr. Jeff Linkenbach. Here we go.
What is the core assumption of the science of the positive, and why does it matter? Through decades of research and reflection, I came to realize the core assumption of the science of the positive framework is that the positive exists. It's real, and it's worth studying, growing, applying. The positive is the archetypal pearl of great price. The positive is worth cultivating in ourselves, our families, our schools, communities, workplaces, and in our cultures. The positive is the heart and soul of the science of the positive framework. It's the core assumption. It's our core. The positive originates from our deepest selves, in our being, and our being together. It's the place from which we speak and say, I am, and we are. It's at our root, at our core. It's our goodness, our beauty, our positivity. And this is why the science of the positive begins with exploring who we are. And it's from this orientation, the science of the positive framework studies how positive factors impact culture and experience. We dedicate scientific rigor and practical efforts on how to measure and grow the positive. And it's all based on this core assumption that the positive exists. It's real and worth expanding. So we orient ourselves and all of our transformational leadership work on this core assumption, and this is why it matters. We then intentionally engage the four essential domains of spirit, science, action, and return, which comprise the cycle of transformation. It's because of this core assumption that the positive exists, that our order of operations always begins with spirit first, the spirit of the positive. Spirit first, before we engage in science leading to actions for desired returns. Spirit always comes first. We start from the heart, from our deepest selves, from our soul, from who we are at our core. The positive exists in us and through us, and it is real and worth studying, measuring, and expanding. It's from here, this powerful platform, from which all applications of the science of the positive proceed outward. Everything that then follows in our transformational leadership work is anchored to this core assumption, the positive exists. And this is what provides the energy and inspiration of our transformational leadership. And from here, from this core assumption that the positive exists, that it's real, that the journey of transformation begins, and this is why it matters.
There it is, John.
There it is. I'm glad that was able to work. You know, I've really come to appreciate Jeff and the work that he does with the science of the positive. I think, like a piece of my mind, you know, there are challenges in the world, and it's important that we address those honestly and directly. But what I love about the work of the Montana Institute is that there is a way to approach those challenges with a grace and a hope and a belief that something better is possible. You know, I think part of our challenge in the world is really a challenge of messaging. Yes, there are horrific things going on. There are systemic challenges that need to be addressed. But at the same time, there are people who are finding beautiful and creative solutions to those challenges. And I think both things are true. And sometimes I think we get lost in the negative, and that makes it hard to see the positive. And what Montana Institute wants to do, what A Piece of My Mind wants to do, is be able to amplify those positive examples of success and be able to build on that. If those are our strengths, let's continue to build on those strengths.
I love the fact that it comes from the spirit, from the soul. It comes from inside you.
Yeah, and that's not a particular denomination or a particular faith tradition. It's sort of the human spirit. But when you can approach a thing sort of with that openness and with that notion of spirit, I think it tends to move the needle more than something that is just facts and statistics. Facts and statistics are important too, but if we leave out that quality and quantity of the spirit, we're missing a part of the bigger picture.
Well, we only have about 5 minutes left, John, and there's one person I'd love to have you talk about, because it seems that he definitely played an integral role in the Louisiana endeavor, where you were down in Louisiana interviewing people, and it's your longtime friend, Barry Yeoman, and I wound up on his website. He's got quite an impressive bio and impressive background, and has done so much. So would you like to talk about him for a few minutes?
Yeah. Barry is one of the best journalists I know, and one of the kindest, most thoughtful humans I've ever encountered. I met Barry, oh my God, a couple of decades ago. It was after Matthew Shepard was killed in Wyoming in a hate crime because Matthew Shepard was gay. Matthew's mother, Judy Shepard, was traveling the country going to high schools talking about anti-bullying, talking about supporting one another and reducing hate in the world. And Barry was assigned to write a profile of Judy Shepard for Ladies Home Journal, and I was assigned to photograph Judy Shepard. And so I met Barry for the first time. We worked together for a couple of days on this project, and then we said what people always say, oh, we should stay in touch. But I knew right away that we would. And so Barry and I have worked on some other projects, and as A Piece of My Mind grows, as I recognize that I cannot go 100 miles an hour indefinitely, and looking at ways to partner with really smart people, I invited Barry to come along and help build this body of work down in Louisiana. And Barry, like me, is, as we get older in our career, really most interested in working with people who we know and respect and on projects that really move our hearts. And so we were both excited about this. Barry has a long history in that part of the country. He lived and worked down there. He's written a lot about food and culture and climate and resilience in South Louisiana. And so it was a really natural fit. And so Barry was able to do the interviewing. Together, we sort of identified who we were going to talk to. The students, interns came in and offered a lot of support with logistics and production, shooting some video along the way and helping set up equipment. And I really got to photograph or really focus on the photography storytelling that I love to do. And so it was, it was a great partnership. The 20th anniversary of Katrina is this week, and the 20th anniversary of Rita, which followed on its heels, is next month. And so we really wanted to do this series of interviews talking about you know, the current state of things. And again, people who are finding creative solutions and ways to live in one of our country's most fragile coastlines. And so we just posted the first of those stories last week. I'll post another one tomorrow. People can find them on our website, but also we have a podcast. And if you just search whatever platform you listen to podcasts, type in A Piece of My Mind, P-E-A-C-E, and our series will come up. This one is called Still Here, and it'll be 10 interviews. By the time we get done, we'll share those out over the next couple of months.
Oh, great, great, great. Yeah, well, I might play one or two on the Peace and Justice Report over the next couple of months.
Yeah, please do. They're super smart people. I'm honored to have met them and learned a lot in the process.
Well, John, I really appreciate the fact that you were available. I know I had to book you 5 or 6 weeks ahead of time. That's how busy you are. So I really appreciate it. And then you got up a little early in Minnesota to be on the air here at 8 a.m. Minnesota time. So thank you so much.
I don't sleep anyway, Bob. It was easy to be up, and I'm really glad to talk with you. Thanks for all the work that you do in the world.
Well, hopefully we'll talk again soon. I'm going to keep an eye on your website. That's how I get back in touch with guests I've had in the past. I just plug into their website every once in a while, see what's going on with them, and then more than likely something's interesting happening, and I contact them. And so it's great having guests who I've had on in the past who I can call upon again for a very interesting and informative interview. So thank you so much, John.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bob. Happy to talk with you anytime. Take care.
Great. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with John Notner. You can find him on the website, A Piece of My Mind. And since I played a little bit of the healing game at the beginning of the show, I'm going to go out with a little bit of the healing game. This time it's Van Morrison with John Lee Hooker. And Tom Walker will be back from his vacation next week. And I'll be back with the Peace and Justice Report in 2 weeks. So have a great day.
Oh, here again.
When I walked home.